today is sensing event classification with high dimensional data. This is joint work with PhD student Woodkay Orten, my colleagues Glenn Carl and Venkatesh Harigrama at BU, and Dr. Homer Kian at the Massachusetts General Hospital. This work was supported in part. This work was supported in part by grants from the United States Air Force Office of Scientific Research and the United States National Science Foundation. I think I'll probably go back here. It's easier. Okay, so the topic of the talk is on classification. So in model-based classification, as we are all aware, we are given a prior distribution on the classes and the likelihood function of the observations given classes. And given these two things, we can come up with the minimum probability of error decision rule, which, as we all know, is the maximum a posteriori probability rule, which simplifies to the maximum likelihood rule for equally likely classes. So that's the model-based classification scenario where the model is specified and you can, in principle, come up with the optimum decision rule. In contrast to this, however, we are interested in what is called as learning-based classification, where everything is data-driven. So you're only given examples of the two classes, say, and you want to come up with an algorithm which separates these classes. So the challenge, however, that we wish to address is in this scenario is that very often you encounter situations where you have high dimensional data. For example, you have surveillance video which run into gigabytes and terabytes of data. You have hyperspectral images. You have, you know, synthetic aperture radar images and so forth. So we have high dimensional data on the one hand and only very few examples compared to the dimensionality of the data on the other hand. Now, you might say, well, why not just use a generic data reduction technique like, say, PCA or LLE or ISOMAP? Well, on the one hand, these are very generic methods which are, you know, not particularly devised for the classification problem, so they optimize certain other generic method measures of such as, you know, preserving pairwise distances and so forth on the one hand, and on the other hand, they haven't been designed with the view to high dimensionality of the problem with very few examples. So our approach is to sort of exploit what I shall call as the latent low-dimensional sensing structure. Now, to make this clear, let's take a little cartoon example. Let's suppose that you're given examples of each class, there are only two classes here, and a learning-based classification algorithm such as SVM or a kernel SVM would simply take this data and develop a classification rule. It would completely ignore if any sensing structure was present or not. In contrast to this is what I would call a sensing-aware classification, where let's say we know that these observations came from some kind of a sensing process, say, for example, a blurring operator, where we may have either full or partial information about the blurring operator and together with some noise. And the question is, can we exploit knowledge of the fact that these observations came from some underlying sensing structure to aid the classification performance? Now, we are actually interested in a theoretical study to understand the fundamental asymptotic limits of classification in the scenario of high dimensionals and very few samples. To make things more concrete, we assume that the data dimension and possibly the number of samples goes to infinity, while the samples per dimension goes to zero. So this is a scenario where we have very few samples of very high dimensional data. But in contrast to a number of studies in the literature which has focused on an asymptotically easy situation, we want to fix the problem difficulty asymptotically, meaning that even if the dimension increases to infinity, asymptotically it's not going to be easy to classify. And for what this essentially means is that we are fixing the signal-to-noise ratio as the problem scales, and this will become clear as I introduce the mathematical model. The fundamental issues that we are wishing to address is, what is the asymptotic classification performance under this asymptotic regime? Does it probability of error go to half, which means is it no better than random guessing? Or does it go to the optimum Bayes probability of error, which, by the way, is not equal to half, which is what I mean by saying fixing the probability, which is not equal to zero, which is what I mean by fixing the problem difficulty, or is it something else? Now, to make things more concrete, I have to introduce a model. So the rest of this talk is based on only this a very specific model. So we're just beginning to understand the grapple of these issues, so we start with a very simple model. The model is very simple in that the observations are made up of starting with some the mean location, which is lying in some kind of a sensing subspace. So think of H as a sensing subspace. And given that you're in class one, you are at this you have a mean location M1, and that you are having a scalar Gaussian perturbation along the H axis to begin with, followed by a vector Gaussian noise perturbation, which will take you outside this subspace into the general p-dimensional space. So that's the sensing model we have to analyze the performance, and that's true for condition on each class, so the means are different. So we know that the means the lie on a subspace, and that there's a scalar Gaussian perturbation component along this subspace, followed by a vector Gaussian perturbation, which takes you out of the subspace. So that's the simple model. Now, and the goal, of course, is that you're given many p-dimensional vectors, say n p-dimensional vectors from each class, and you have to come up with a classifier and understand the asymptotic classification performance for different scenarios. Now, we chose the model to be simple to keep things tractable. We are interested in a theoretical understanding. Now, even though it's fairly simple, there are some scenarios where this makes sense. For example, you could have a sensor network scenario where you could have p sensors, where p is the dimension of the observation in the previous slide. Each component being a sensor in this case, observing some kind of underlying weak signal field. And under class one, you're observing H, which is a signal, under noise. And under the different class, you're observing the negative of H under noise. And the goal, of course, is that you're given N observations of the weak signal per sensor under each class. And the question is, can you come up with a classifier that decides what the next observation is going to be? Which class does it belong to? Does it belong to the plus class or the negative class? So now moving ahead, the kind of classifiers for the rest of the talk we're going to consider are the following. We'll first look at the baseline classifier, which is a full base classifier, which means you know everything about the model. So what is the classification performance there? We're going to fix it, but we're going to get familiar with the notation there. Then we're going to look at what I call an unstructured classifier, which means that I know that it's of the conditionally Gaussian observations, but I don't know the means, I don't know the variances, covariances, and I'm going to attempt to estimate everything using maximum likelihood estimates. How does that perform? And then finally, I'll look at structure-based classification algorithms, where in the first case, we look at full structure where I know the exact sensing subspace. How does the things behave in those cases? In the second case, I refer to a structured maximum likelihood, which means that we estimate parameters knowing that it lives in a low-dimensional subspace, but I don't know the subspace. And finally, we'll see that we'll have negative results in these cases, and that will motivate a structured sparsity model. So here's a baseline model. So that's the likelihood ratio test. Okay, you can churn through the math, and you can come up to what is one of the optimum Bayes decision rule. It's going to be a linear discriminant rule, and it's based on these parameters delta and sigma and mu. It's not important to know exactly what the expressions are. Delta stands for the difference in the class conditional means. Mu is the average of the class conditional means, and sigma is the covariance of the observations. So the classification rule depends on these parameters. And the misclassification probability you can evaluate in closed form. It is in terms of the Q function, which is nothing but the tail probability of a standard normal. And in terms of these parameters, M2, M1, et cetera, which appear here. Now, the important thing is that we want to fix the difficulty of the problem as the dimension scale, which means that I have to fix the argument of the Q function, which that amounts to essentially fixing almost everything here, in particular the energy of the sensing vector, H. So we want to keep the norm of H fixed as things scale, and that's an important part of this work. So that's what the full base classifier looks like. Now let's go on to the case where we know that it's conditionally Gaussian, but you know we don't know any of these parameters. So this is what the base classifier looks like, but I don't know delta, I don't know sigma, I don't know the model. So I have to estimate all these parameters from the data given. So one approach, a natural approach, is to use a plug-in estimator, which means estimate all these parameters using the data given and plug it into the optimum decision rule. So that you get to what is known as the empirical Fisher rule, and you can analyze the probability of error. You can get a closed form expression and look at what happens to that probability of error as the samples per dimensions go down to zero, the dimensions increase to infinity, but you fix the difficulty of the level throughout. Turns out, not surprisingly, that the probability of error goes to half, which means you're no better than random guessing. Now, this is not surprising because you're trying to estimate far more parameters than you have data for. So asymptotically, you don't catch up with the overload of information that you would estimate. So ignoring the structure and estimating all parameters is not a good idea in general. Now let's move on to structured approaches. So let's remind ourselves, so this is a sensing model, and let's suppose on the one extreme, now we know the entire sensing structure, which means that I know the subspace in which the observations lie, okay, the underlying one-dimensional subspace. So a natural thing to do in this case is why not project everything down to that one-dimensional subspace, reduce you to a scalar learning-based classification problem, estimate all the parameters in that reduced one-dimensional problem using the data you have, the maximum likelihood estimates, and see how it works. Okay? That leads you to the what I call as projected empirical Fisher rule, and that's the exact expression, if you wish. But the exact expression itself is not very important. But the idea is that you know the sensing subspace, so you project everything down to that and reduce it to a one-dimensional problem. And analyze the probability of error shown here asymptotically as the number of samples goes to infinity. Turns out, not surprisingly again, that as you keep the difficulty level of the problem fixed and as the number of samples go to infinity, the probability of error goes to the base probability of error, which means it's the optimum thing you can do. Now, the reason why it's kind of expected is because you know there's a latent one-dimensional structure involved in this problem, and you know it exactly. So when you project it down to that problem, the actual dimension of the data is irrelevant. So P doesn't appear into this equation at all, and you're reduced to a scalar classification problem. And as we know, that when you do a maximum likelihood estimation with infinite number of samples, you can asymptotically get optimum performance when the data dimension is fixed. So in this case, effectively, it's a dimensionality reduction, but it takes into account the dimensional reduction in this relevant to this problem. Now, but the reality, of course, is that we don't even know in general the sensing structure. Okay, we don't know the sensing subspace. So one idea is, why not estimate the sensing subspace from the data you have? So what would be one approach to estimate the sensing subspace? Well, we notice that if I look at the difference in the class conditional means delta, it's actually aligned with H. Okay. So if it's aligned with H, a natural thing to do is to use a maximum likelihood estimate of the delta, which was done before, and use that as a proxy for H. Then project everything down to that delta, and then you're back to the previous situation. And this, again, we get to a projected empirical Fisher rule, except that the direction along which you're projecting is no longer H, because it's not known to you, but it's the estimated H. What do you expect to get here? It turns out that if you analyze the probability of classification error, as the samples per dimension goes to zero, and the difficulty level is fixed, the probability of classification error goes to half. Which means that even though you knew there was an underlying one-dimensional sensing structure and you knew that delta was aligned with it, trying to estimate using a maximum likelihood kind of an estimate doesn't do the job. Okay, you're no better than random guessing asymptotically. So it sort of suggests that you need additional sensing structure to exploit here. Now, although this was not presented in our ICAS paper, we have since then been able to show that this is fundamental, meaning that for this particular problem we are analyzing here, without any additional structure on H, it's impossible for any learning algorithm to do any better than random guessing asymptotically. So that's not presented in ICAS, it'll be appearing elsewhere, but it's actually a fundamental, we have a lower bound on the classification probability, which actually goes to half, and if you don't make any assumptions on the sensing structure. So that motivates a need for additional structure on H. And one of the structures that we'd like to study is, of course, it's a popular thing these days, is sparsity, okay? So let's say that the signal, the subspace H's vector direction is sparse, meaning that the energy in H is localized in only very few components compared to the number of dimensions. So in particular, let's say that the tail energy of H, so this is the vector H, the magnitude of the vector H, the components, and there are P components, and let's say I pick a truncation point T and look at the energy in this truncation and the tail of the H vector here. As T and P both go to infinity, we want the tail energy to go to zero. So this is effectively a statement about the sparsity, asymptotic sparsity of the signal. So in this case, a natural thing to do is to use, so earlier we used the maximum likelihood estimate delta of delta, and that didn't work. But now we know something more about H, namely that its tail energy goes to zero. So one interesting thing you can try is, why not truncate that estimator, the components of the estimator, and use that as a proxy for H instead. So the idea is to keep the estimate you had earlier for all components less than T, some truncation parameter T, and then set to zero everything beyond it. So that leads to a truncation-based estimator for the direction along H. And now if you use that, let's see how things behave. Now we can first show that as the dimensions, the number of samples, and the truncation point goes to infinity, but the truncation point is chosen in such a way that it goes slower than the number of samples. Then asymptotically we can estimate this signal subspace perfectly, meaning that in the mean square error sense, the error between the truncated estimate and the true delta goes to zero, we can asymptotically estimate the dimension, the subspace. And of course, if you can estimate the subspace perfectly asymptotically, it's not surprising then that as things scale and you keep the difficulty level fixed, the probability of classification error goes to the Bayes probability of error. So in other words, knowledge of the sensing structure plus additional sparsity assumptions or some additional structural information can asymptotically give you the Bayes probability of error. So here's a little simulation to sort of reinforce some of these insights. So here we have fixed the Bayes probability error, the difficulty to be 0.1. It's fixed throughout as the dimension scale. The energy is fixed to some value 2. And here are some parameters chosen in the model. And the number of samples is growing slower than the dimension as shown here. The truncation point is chosen to grow slower than the number of samples as shown here. And we are going to assume a polynomial decay for H. And shown here are, for example, on the green line is the H, one particular realization of H. And on the red line is actually the noise, the maximum likelihood estimate, delta hat, normalized to have unit energy, shown here. And the blue one is a truncated version of the red one. The truncation point T, I think, set to 20 or something. On the right side is the probability of error on the vertical axis versus the dimension, ambient dimension. So as the dimension scales, the unstructured approach, where you don't know anything about the sensing structure, you try to estimate all the parameters using maximum likelihood estimates, will approach the probability of error being half. You go to half. On the other hand, if you knew the sensing subspace, but you estimated using naively using simply delta hat, which is the maximum likelihood estimate, then also you get to half. But if you use a truncation-based estimate, you approach the Bayes optimal performance here. So to conclude my talk, the few takeaway points are that, first of all, there are many problems where you encounter situations where the number of samples are far fewer than the ambient data dimension. And in addition, that often exists a latent sensing structure which is low dimensional, which can be exploited. If you totally ignore the sensing structure and naively try to estimate everything using maximum likelihood estimates, you would probably be no better than random guessing in many scenarios. And even having a general knowledge of the sensing structure, like knowing that it's a one-dimensional signal H, but I don't know what H is, and trying to estimate it naively cannot do the job. However, if you have the general knowledge of sensing structure plus some additional structure on H, then you can often recover the optimum, asymptotically optimum classification performance. So with that, I conclude my talk.
It's a long day, I guess.
We all, I think, are eager for the Czech evening, right? Yeah, the bus is going to be departing soon.